welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast for Thursday, July 25th, 2019. Now, actually, before I say what day it is, I think we've all noticed that there seems to be a general trend in what holidays are. What would you guys say they usually center around?
Hot dogs?
It's always hot dogs.
Well, foods, exactly, carnival foods.
Food. I would just say foods in general. So today's Culinarian's Day. Which seems
like
it's
say culinary. Culinary. That sounds like what happens to food on the way out.
It says culinarians. So I guess that would be makers of food.
Speaking of culinary,
is that just another way to say a cook?
Experts or chefs, if you will. Did you guys ever see Mike trying to make corn dogs?
I did. I've seen that Instagram.
Wait. We're skipping over something. You're right. It's the word culinarian. Yeah. What is a culinarian? Is that just a guy that is a fan of food?
I don't know. Just any person that's associated with food. Let's look it up.
I'm going out on a limb, and I'm saying there's no chef that's self-respecting calling himself a culinarian.
What would that be the equivalent of us calling ourselves entrepreneur and artists?
No. It'd be the equivalent of calling ourselves artisans, not artists, not woodworkers, but that kind of like in-between term.
Yeah. Okay, here it is. A person skilled in the preparation of food.
Yeah, that's broad.
Okay. I would not describe myself as skilled in it, but I could prepare food.
Pop those Pop-Tarts.
I can make a hot pocket.
If I had to. I was about to say, I can throw a Pop-Tart in a toaster.
Hell yeah. I'll even put that hot pocket right in that sleeve to get that crispy, crusty, tender, flaky crust.
Oh, Chris, yeah. I like that table you built this week, or at least the one you put a video out for. It had a really cool base.
Yeah, I didn't build that. You mean the Sean Boyd table?
I haven't seen the video yet.
It's on my channel. Yeah, that's a Sean Boyd. So he put his first video up on our channel. I didn't want to say my channel because I don't want it to sound like it's me just like inviting him on it. I want it to be more like he has a stake in it.
Okay, tell me more.
So basically, we had collaborated. So the way that we first started working together is we were just doing like hangouts weekly where we would just work on designs, just kind of bounce ideas back and forth. And so that was going really well. Then we did a collaboration together. We built the Bad Larry together and that went really well too. And this was something I had been thinking about for a while, kind of like expanding the channel beyond just me. But I didn't want to just like do it in a half-assed way where I was just like, I don't know. I wanted to make it something bigger. And I thought that like Sean's style and my style meshes really well. Not only the style of furniture, but also our personalities are pretty similar, even though in the videos we're pretty different. And so I feel like if there's anybody that has a ton of crossover in who my audience would like, it would probably be him. And so I want to see how this will grow. I feel like we can probably achieve more working together than we both can having channels separately. So we're kicking it off. And the first video went live on Saturday, which is a weird launch day for me. It's done pretty well so far, like slightly less than average, but you know, it's not like it's tanking or anything like that. The majority of the comments seem to be very positive. You can tell from it that there's a lot of people that like kind of have thought of us, I don't know, in the same vein beforehand. Right. So I think it's a good natural fit.
Okay. So you got to fill everybody in because I feel like this is coming as a little bit of a shock to me.
Yeah.
Sean Boyd is going to be producing videos on your channel regularly.
Yeah. So we have it scheduled right now for at least one a month through the remainder of the year. And
wow. Okay.
And hopefully to ramp up. You know, I got like a few of those comments where people are like, I come to your channel to watch you. And I get that. Like, you know, anytime something changes on the internet, there seems to be a little bit of backlash initially. But I feel like the overwhelming majority of it is very positive. And I say like, let's just stick with it. Do at least one a month, maybe more than that. Because I feel like by the time we get like 5-7 videos in, that's going to fall by the wayside and people just be like, cool. It's not like it's going to be less of me making videos. It's just going to be more in total.
Totally. Man, that's a shock. That's such a surprise. I mean, because everything you led up to was that it was going to be a collab video. You kept this under wraps really well.
Yeah, it's there's other parts of the equation that I don't want to go into yet because we still need to figure stuff out, but I'm hoping it'll kind of expand beyond just YouTube.
Wow.
We're getting married.
Very awesome.
We're getting married. No.
All right. Well, I'm excited to hear that. Hear how that goes. Yeah. Congrats, Sean Boyd. That's awesome.
I'll keep everybody filled in as things develop.
I was about to say, the video just came out, I think, yesterday, the day before we're recording this. So I need to watch that thing because I feel like I'm missing a little info still.
It's,
so.
It's pretty funny in the beginning, too. Like the way that we... So we made it so that you couldn't tell by looking at the thumbnail because we actually built part of it. We finished the build here in my shop, and then we brought everything to my house to take the thumbnail so it looks exactly like one of my thumbnails would look. And the way that we introed the video was pretty funny. So definitely give that a look.
Okay, awesome. Dang. All right. Making big moves, Chris. Big moves. Holy cow.
What have you been up
big
to?
Big moves. Me. I'm trying to double down on this concrete river table idea because I've got a couple kind of quick ideas around it that I want to make sure and experiment with before I just kind of have another idea and forget to go back to this.
Yeah.
So the white concrete river table came out. It went really well. Everybody had an awesome response. So thank you. And I'm saying this in advance. I'm expecting the video to be live by the time this
episode
does.
I like it. You're like
does.
Willing it into being a banger.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I feel really dumb because I mentioned it at the end of the episode last week, but I don't know. Sponsor approval. That's all I'm going to say. Squarespace, it's sponsored by Squarespace, and Squarespace has sponsored so many of my videos. And at this point, I could do a Squarespace read in my sleep, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me, they're an awesome sponsor. One, because I've used them, I used them way before they sponsored anything, and they just have a good product. So I'm 100% with Squarespace. And I can record those ad reads really quick. Like I mentioned, I've done plenty of them. And because I've done so many videos, the approval process is really quick. I know what to say. They know I know what I'm going to say. And so that all kind of goes smoothly. But the rep that I've had at Squarespace for the past however many years has now moved to another position. And so I've got a new contact that I've been talking to. And I guess the approval process for this video is taking a little longer than expected. So
that's good to know.
My apologies.
Yeah, because
I got a little ahead of myself with saying that video was going to be live on the last episode, but it should be out by the time you're hearing this.
That's good to know, because I think we probably had the same person, because mine left too, and I have a new one. I was actually to the point where I wasn't even doing approvals with them anymore. Like, I was just, like, putting the video up and telling them after it was live and everything was good. But, yeah, I'll make sure that I know that going into this next one.
Oh, man. Hey, if I don't hear anything if I don't hear anything by Wednesday, I need to keep my word, so I'm just going to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear you've done that before.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've just put it up before with them.
Dang. Okay. Holy cow. And no backlash at all, huh?
No, they've always been fine.
Okay, great. Well, so anyways, to go back to this river table, I did a white square one, and so I want to follow it up with a pitch black round one.
Mm.
And round coffee tables, I think, are great. Round tables in general are great, but I mean, you just came out with an oval-shaped table, but in general, round tables are a little bit more work. They're a little more complicated, and that's kind of why I tend to fall back on throwing some hairpin legs on a round tabletop, kind of like what the project I did whenever we were all collaborating over at your place, Chris. And so I kind of wanted to avoid that. I didn't necessarily want to build a super complicated base because the project is really about the top.
Yeah.
I wanted to experiment getting pitch black concrete for one, but mostly it's about that river table and kind of just doing it in a round form factor. And so I started doing a little Googling. I found an IKEA table for like $75, something like that, that has a really great little simple square tube base for a round table. And I'm just going to be doing a quick IKEA hack, basically building a concrete river table top for an IKEA table base.
Is the top melamine?
And I think it's kind of that.
Is
the top melamine? No, it's actually, so it's got this round metal tray and then a piece of glass sets into it.
Mm. Are you actually going to use that top to make the mold?
No, I would have, but the tray's just not deep enough. It's really only about maybe a quarter of an inch deep, enough for that piece of glass to set into. That's it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Because we made a round concrete tabletop before, a similar thing. It was more of like a Target hack where we bought like a pre-made base and it had a melamine top. And we just took that flexible vinyl trim and just hot glued it around the perimeter of the round thing.
Oh, that's really good. So you're pouring it in place also. So that tray is like, it's what you're fastening to. The concrete's already stuck to it.
The tray popped, the top popped out.
How did it do that?
Well, you know what a flexible baseboard trim is? It's like,
yeah, it's like a vinyl, rubber almost.
It's about an eighth inch. Right. So that's about 3 inches wide. And we just cut a piece with an X-Acto knife to be the right length to go around the perimeter. And we just glued it to the perimeter of the tabletop.
Okay.
To the edge of it. And so you basically, we used a tabletop as the bottom of the mold, and the flexible vinyl trim was the sides of the mold. Once the concrete cured, we just peeled it off, peeled the flexible trim away, and then just like lifted the concrete off.
That's a really cool idea. It's funny that you mentioned it too, because once again, doing a round tabletop, I had to make that round form, and I was just walking up and down aisles at Home Depot trying to find the right material. And I was about to use vinyl flooring, actually, because it's such a similar material.
Yeah.
I kind of saw it and looked at the cross section of it, was messing with it. I was like, this might work. And so I had that kind of at the top of my list as I was going through until I eventually found, they call it bendy board. So it's a little bit thinner than a quarter of an inch, but they're MDF strips that are about 4 inches wide. Mm-hmm. And apparently that's what actually people use whenever they're making curved sidewalk forms or any kind of really like gently curved round concrete form. They'll put some stakes in the ground and then use this and then bend this between them. Gotcha. So they're like $2 a piece, super flexy, really great. I thought this was the perfect solution, but it turned out the radius for the circle that I was using was a little bit small. And so it was just bending a little further than this MDF wanted to. And so I ended up going through a couple pieces before I finally got one to wrap all the way around the tabletop without snapping in half. But it was a really cool solution. And I'm kind of just glad in general I found that, because the bendy boards are, I really think they're like $2, maybe $2.50 a piece. And it's already cut. It seems to be more bendable than typical MDF or particle board, but it still kind of holds vertical well, which is good. It doesn't try and splay out once you start pouring anything into it. But yeah, it should be a fun video. It shouldn't be anything crazy. But like I said, I just wanted to kind of see the idea through with this concrete river table idea before I started moving on to other things, because I have a tendency to kind of get the idea down once, but then get distracted. Is that something that y'all ever do, or do y'all kind of, y'all hold it down okay?
I would say that, yeah, I tend to get distracted most of the time. Like, I guess an equivalent to the black and white concrete could be the crayon stuff. It's like I did two quick projects and then kind of moved on. And I'm always like, oh, yeah. I should do another one. I've got a few ideas, but I'm always just like, I don't want to overdo
it with
it.
But you did two.
I did two.
I really think doing two is an important thing. It's like putting your stamp on it. It's doubling down.
It wasn't a fluke.
Right,
just to let
exactly.
The people know, I could do this again. Don't mess with me.
Exactly.
I don't know if I get distracted. If I do get distracted, it's because I distract myself from my work with other work.
Right. Yeah, pretty much.
It's not like I'm the next going idea off to do nothing else. Takes over your attention.
So do you guys have a project or kind of like an idea that you hit the surface of that you want to deep dive again? Like an old idea from your channel?
So this one's not an old idea, but it's actually something that was, so it's what I'm going to do in October. I'm going to do another video with LG for a TV, which I think you guys are doing videos with them as well. So people will probably see a lot of those TVs coming up, just like they saw a lot of the projectors. But so this was, I had this idea beforehand, actually, of making something where I'd use epoxy to make it look like a media console or a table or something was kind of floating. And so then I saw this TV when they reached out, and it's pretty cool the way that they designed it, where it's like got a piece of glass going over the whole front. And so it kind of has this illusion where like the TV's floating behind it a little bit, the way that the base is set up. And so I was like, oh man, this would be the perfect project for this idea that I had. So I did like a test piece of it probably, I don't know, a month and a half ago. And I'm not going to get to actually build this thing for another 2 months, but just to like give you a general of what the idea was, it was basically take a 2-inch by 2-inch piece of walnut that'll be the leg. And I just kind of like cut a bunch of weak points into it and then started hammering it to make it break so that the end is all like splintered as if it actually got snapped in half. Yeah. Then I build a form that piece goes in and pour epoxy. So it's the shape of the leg. So it's like it goes from splintered to epoxy. And then my goal will be to make the epoxy super clear, so that then it kind of looks like it's just like a leg that splinters and then is invisible. And then the base will be floating above that.
It's very Peter Brown of you, Chris.
Thank you.
I love it. That'll be a fun one. That's really cool.
Yeah, hopefully I'm gonna pull it off.
And so you said you sort of like mocked it up or did a little prototype. Were you messing with how to figure out how to get that epoxy without a million bubbles?
So it was the first time that I was going to use the deep pour system, which is something that Total Boat had just come out with. I don't know even what the limit is for like the regular stuff, but I think you're supposed to pour it pretty thin just because it gets so hot because it sets up fast.
Okay.
And so this one, it takes a lot longer to cure. So you can pour it. I think they said, I have to look at it again, but like 2.5 inches thick, something like that. So I'm like under the, I don't know, the maximum
threshold.
Yeah, the threshold. Apparently this stuff doesn't get bubbles as bad. Maybe because the cure time is longer. I don't know if that's true or not. In the test one that I did, I hit the surface with like just a heat gun and it seems to be fine. I actually still need to sand it to see how clear it is all the way through. It's still kind of hazy right now. But yeah, I mean, I think that it should be good. I know I've seen other people, like I've seen Johnny Builds and Mike Modustrial using like those pressure pots.
Right.
But yeah, they put the whole cup in and they do that and then they pour it, right? They're not like putting their okay.
If you have a small enough piece, you can put it in there. But I imagine you're making a leg, so that's not happening.
Yeah, it's probably going to be too long. And actually, the way that I was thinking about doing it, just to make it simpler, was to get basically two pieces and splinter each end. So now I have four splintered ends, make one form, put it all in there, pour it, and then when it comes out, cut it. So now I have four individual legs.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah,
that makes sense.
It would be way too big to do that with, but I'll see how this one comes out, and if I need to, I'll do that. But yeah, the goal will be to get super clear epoxy, so I may need to test a little bit more depending on how this one comes out once I sand it.
Nice. All right, Ben, what about you? Do you have any ideas that you need to go back to? Anything you left a little, I don't know, underdeveloped?
Unfinished business.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, I normally don't start something unless I think there's multiple projects to be explored out of that concept or idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just I normally drift to what I'm most interested in next. And then that kind of naturally recirculates. And one of the things I'm trying to focus on now is less number chasing and more just doing what I think I'm interested in and just going after that, because it's kind of all good at this point anyways, from a business side, like, you know,
yeah,
it's weird. So it's, I think I could play it all right by the numbers and grow a little bit faster and make a little bit more money. But I also don't think I would do as many sort of interesting new discoveries that keep me sort of invested. So it's interesting that you bring that up, because I am sort of going through my sketchbooks and moving up ideas that I thought were, that I was really excited about, but I thought wouldn't necessarily be bangers, and trying to move those more to the forefront. Just so I keep myself motivated and interested in what I'm doing. Otherwise, I can tend to kind of check out a little bit.
Yeah. So what are they? What are a couple of things you got coming up?
Well, I'm still working on the solar oven. You know, I just went and got insulation and thermal mass to put into it. So with just the basic black painted plywood box, I got the air from an outside temperature from about 105 degrees. You know, Joshua Tree's hot. I got the inside of the oven to 220 to 240 degrees.
Wow.
And it got it sort of maintaining to about that temperature, which is pretty close to what I need to kind of start fusing the plastic together.
What are you looking for?
If I could get it to 300 to 350, then I really have a lot of options for it, all the different types of plastic that I'm working with.
Awesome.
And so next up, it's figuring out. So I'm going to add insulation. So I got some rigid insulation. And then add thermal mass inside of that insulation. And what that's going to do is just going to allow the radiant heat to keep building up and changing the flow rate. It's really interesting when you think of heat as like a fluid that's filling up this container. And you're using the insulation to slow the amount of heat that's flowing out due to the temperature difference outside of the oven than it is from the inside the oven. And so if you slow that with insulation, but also increase the capacity for it to be stored in the thermal mass inside the insulation, you can keep upping that temperature difference between the inside air and the outside air.
So that's cool.
That's like a fun project, but again, it's more of a research thing. Where the sort of tweaking and building the oven, I'm lightly filming it, but I'll probably rebuild one completely after I figure out what works.
Totally.
Maybe just include a few sort of clips of the testing. So that kind of stuff I normally wouldn't do as a project, just because it takes a long time to kind of just figure out if the project's feasible before you actually do it. And it's not like a sure thing. You might come out with inconclusive results, or it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So that's the part I think I'm most excited about, is doing things that I think are cool and important, but might not work the first time. And just being like, you know, it's not that big of a deal if I go a few weeks without a video, like, still survive.
Yeah.
So just trying to actually take advantage of the opportunities that you've created for yourself is harder and more rare than it seems. You know, whenever I just came back from Haven, and whenever I'm at one of these things, whether it's Haven or Workbench Con, talking to other people, the most successful people are often the ones that feel the most pressure, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like people that are doing really, really well in content and all sorts of things, they're always like, oh, I need to be doing this. I need to be doing this. I'm like, dude, you don't. Like, you're kind of good.
Yeah. Well, there's like a certain amount of pressure that's always keeping you busy. So even if you're not doing everything completely by the book, always doing something is better than just doing a little bit the right way or doing nothing at all.
Right. So I'll always be busy because I like doing stuff. Like I don't like just sitting around doing nothing, but I want to be better busy, not just more busy. So yeah. And speaking of Haven, I just got back from there last night and it was pretty cool. It was a fun time. Got to catch up with Mandy Gubler from Vintage Revival. And she showed me some really cool new stuff that she's working with. We were just talking about like good ideas that aren't normal, but actually make a ton of sense. And we were talking about how I love tile. I love tiled surfaces in bathrooms, but it's funny that there aren't more options to it. Everything is, you know, a tiled pattern. And I was thinking like, oh, you know, maybe I want to do a bathroom using like all sheets of Corian. And she was like, oh, no, check this out. And she sent me a link to this stuff called Limestrong, which is a plaster. Mm-hmm. So it's like a plaster you could apply like an interior stucco, but it's a smooth finish and has a really nice matte texture, but it's totally waterproof. You could use it for showers and things like that. So it's almost like a grout that you can actually trowel on as a complete finish.
Yeah.
And we were talking about how much we like walls that have just a little bit of texture to them. So that like when, like if you put a window near them, the light will really like wash across it really nice. And so I love going to things like this because you pick up like one or two tips like that, which is a type of material I've been looking for. So I'm really excited. I'm going to start ordering some of that right away and start experimenting with that. So that was pretty cool. The other thing I liked about it is I think there's like so many ways you could use a more durable, less flaky, waterproof plaster on furniture stuff, just to create, you know, sort of different kind of textures and finishes. And I think what the potential is that you could make really simple plywood structures and then just coat them with a plaster.
Yeah.
And come up with some things that kind of are in between concrete and pottery, but in much more dramatic shapes because you're not limited by weight and stuff like that as much.
So how does it feel to the touch? Has either of you guys like gotten your hands on it at all?
It would be like smoother grout.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah, because I was thinking about it, you know, just as a fallback, just even if it's a tabletop, if it's durable, it seems to be durable enough to do that. I'd be really curious, like, how it feels. Is it, like, almost soft or is it, you know, got a little bit of...
I'm going to order a bunch. There's also some really cool ways you can color and tint it.
Yeah, I bet.
I like the idea of doing, like, really heavily colored stuff, like a deep navy blue, like textured plaster, I think, could be awesome.
That could...
So I'll order some and I'll have it out here by the next time you're out in Joshua Tree so we can experiment with it. So, oh, the other cool thing that I got to do this weekend is I got to give away a big check.
Yeah, I saw that. That's awesome. That's fun.
So QuickCrete, who's been a long-term sponsor of mine, they had me out to Haven to do a talk and more of a Q&A with some of the people there. And they also did a competition. And okay, if you ever see QuickCrete doing a competition... I know, Mike, you've entered before. You should definitely enter it because they give away a lot of money and not a lot of people enter.
Right. No.
So they gave away a $10,000 cash prize. And I think they maybe had like 30 entries.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's like, I mean, the project that won was awesome. You can check her work out at Ellison Made on Instagram. She made a really great project. She's an awesome sort of sign maker that's now experimenting with concrete. And she won a big check. You know, so it's like... You know, I think with the One Bag Wonder competition they did before, which gave away 5,000 in cash prizes, I think they had like maybe like 100 entries. So if you ever see QuickCrete doing something where they're giving away cash prizes, you know, give it a shot because you got a pretty good chance of winning. So that was fun. It was so funny too. Like I gave her the check and I mean, we were taking the photos and stuff and she was like just bawling. She was like so happy.
Yeah.
Like, so that part was just amazing. Yeah, it was a fun weekend. And now I'm back in Joshua Tree. And right after we're finished recording, I'm heading out to the Container House to hopefully do the final sort of photo shoot for it. So I hired I hired Caleb Cole, absolutely amazing photographer. Like, I've had my eye on it, you know, his work for a long time. And I'm like, ooh, I'm going to hire someone to capture this project. And I hopefully that's going to be something I do a lot more going forward, is just working with people that are really talented on the production side. Because my interests have reached sort of a peak relative to like the time I want to put into it.
Yeah.
So I don't want to just hire people that are just competent. I want to hire people that are going to add a creative layer on top of the work. And I think that'll also help motivate me to do more sort of installation art type projects as well. Because if you can get someone that can really capture that drama and take things visually to the next level, it makes sense from both a business standpoint and a creative standpoint.
It's funny, that style of project is usually the tougher ones to kind of capture as well. If you've got something really functional, whatever it is, like a piece of furniture, it's easy to photograph that compared to something a little bit more abstract.
Yeah.
Because you can, if it's a table, put a couple cups on it and everybody knows what's going on, you know?
Yeah. And it's sort of like, I'm trying to merge all these new considerations I'm having about what I'm doing together. So I was listening to the Making It podcast, and I love how these sort of like content recommendation circles go. So I was listening to Making It, and the guys there were talking about a YouTube video from Veritasium. You guys ever seen that channel?
Yeah.
He's fantastic. Super smart guy. Just breaks down issues really well. And he did a video called Why My Video Went Viral.
Oh, yeah.
And he talked about the things that we've all recognized, that the way YouTube is going is more and more thumbnails. And he slightly, in a very like mature way, sort of bemoaned that as being kind of a push towards the sensational. And I think it's easy to have that, you know, get off my lawn, old grumpy man thing, where it's like, oh, YouTube just wants sensational thumbnails and really, you know, clickbaity titles. That's terrible. I remember the good old days when you could just throw up, you know, a picture of a boring ass coffee table and get a million views. Well, I'm not saying I don't occasionally have those feelings, but it's totally unproductive just to be upset. So instead, I think like, well, I want to do stuff that is a little bit more challenging to me. And at the same time, this is the way things are going. So is there a productive way that I can merge these two things? And that's why I kind of want to do more of like this sort of kind of installation art or just big visually spectacular projects, because, well, if thumbnails need to be a little bit more sensational, let me bring in new creative talent. Let me try bigger and crazier things, but do them aligned with my interests. So maybe I'll do like a giant hanging garden or like some sort of like really spectacular greenhouse project, or figure out a really incredible way to melt plastic or build a tree house without trees.
Yeah.
It's just called a house, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. But those are all things that I've been sort of interested from a design challenge, and I have sort of like a rough visual idea of how they could be great, but they're going to be all longer running projects. But, you know, when you think that, well, maybe doing fewer but bigger and crazier projects might actually be better for the business, and then spending more time and resources to kind of produce, bring in more talented people to create the thumbnails and that kind of content, is a way where I can at least theoretically start to align these different things that on the surface my reaction to was negative. But if I am strategic about how I sort of stack them together and mix and match, it could actually end up being a great thing.
Totally. That's cool.
I got a question for Mike, but first let's take an ad break. Thank you, Storyblocks, for supporting this episode of the Modern Maker Podcast. Storyblocks Video is a great service for when you're in need of a quick video clip for B-roll, After Effects templates, or motion backgrounds for your videos.
I really like using it for the vector graphics. So if I need a pattern to CNC or laser etch onto a material, I'll look at Storyblocks and I'll just search under textures and patterns. And what's awesome is they'll have some things that look like they're hand-drawn, but they're vector files, so you can scale them perfectly without them becoming pixelated. It's also just a great resource for actually sifting through ideas because it's so well curated. So anytime you're looking at a project and you think, hey, maybe this wardrobe's just a little bit flat or dry and you're trying to get an idea for either maybe a stencil that you paint on it, be sure to check out these kind of graphics. And they're royalty-free, so you can use them both for professional or for just hobbyist use.
So by joining Storyblocks, you'll have access to studio quality clips, templates, motion backgrounds, and more at a fraction of the cost. You can download as much as you want from their member library and get exclusive discounts to millions of additional marketplace clips where you'll save 40% off every purchase compared to non-members. New clips are added regularly, so there's always something fresh to download. So head over to storyblocks.com/modernmaker to get started today. Again, that's storyblocks.com/modernmaker. Or just click the link in the description. All right. Thanks, Storyblocks. Okay, we're back. So, Mike, you brought this whole topic kind of up about, you know, the things that we maybe went away from too quick. You were talking about the concrete. Was there something that spurred that on that you thought you didn't give enough, that you moved away from too soon?
Oh, like a previous project
where I didn't dive deep enough. Yeah, why you're so adamant about making sure you get these two concrete projects in before you move on.
Man, that's a good question. I don't know. So there's only been a couple instances where I've been like, okay, I'm onto something or got a good idea or I just need to follow this down. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, a few of those things were like working with plate steel.
Right.
I remember, you know, whenever I walked into a metal supermarket, which is a great resource. I'm going to go on a tangent. If you're looking for a metal supplier, just Google and try and find something. But if you have a metal supermarkets in your area, it's a chain metal supplier. They're in a lot of states in the US. I would recommend them. And the reason is you don't have to buy full either 10 or 20 foot sticks. They'll sell it to you by the foot. So if you only need a quarter sheet of plate steel, you can go and buy a quarter sheet. You don't have to buy the whole thing. So they're a good resource if you're not doing giant projects. But I remember one day going in there for some square tube and seeing that they had plate steel. I'm like, wait a second, you can use plate steel like plywood, was kind of the thought. And so I made that simple fire pit thing where it was sort of trapezoids that were kind of splaying out. Mm-hmm. And then from there, well, actually that was my first welding project, but from there, realizing welding was easy, realizing plate steel was cool, you know, we kind of took that far enough down this rabbit hole that I feel like it did well. I talked a lot about bungee cords, but I never really did anything with bungee cords that was too incredible. I thought about it a lot, but I didn't have that idea that was the certified banger that was that undeniable thing where it's like, all right, drop everything else and do this. I did a stool that incorporated bungee cords, but that was about it. Hmm. So I don't know. I don't really have any huge regrets in terms of looking back on stuff, but I do recognize this as a decent idea. And I just want to make sure that it's kind of fully fledged out before I leave it behind.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's not only a good idea, but it's also one of those things where like, you're going to have a lot of initial investment to get up to speed in something. And so then to just do one thing feels kind of wasteful in a way.
Dude, that's no joke. I'm telling you, doing concrete projects is the perfect opportunity to knock out three projects at once.
Yeah, just make like a bunch of the concrete forms at one time. You're going to make a huge mess. So
yeah,
it's not going to be that much messier to make three than one.
No joke. You're going to make a huge mess. And there's so much of that, like hurry up and wait.
Yeah,
with making concrete molds especially. So you cut all your pieces, then you put them together, then you got to paste wax it. So then you got to wait for the paste wax to kind of harden before you can put silicone caulk down so that it's all waterproofed around the edges. But before you can round over those corners, you got to, you know,
let that dry up.
Before you can, you got to let that cure. Yeah. Everything's got 45 minutes to cure. So yeah, that would be the perfect opportunity to come up with like three projects and knock them kind of all out in succession. Because the first concrete mold I did, which was that square one, it took, I mean, I basically spent a day making the mold just because it had been a while since I had done one. And I was sort of just moving slow to make sure I was filming well, rather than just rushing through it and getting the same kind of bird's eye shot over and over again. I wanted to make sure and mix in a few decent camera angles. But the second concrete form I made, it wasn't square, but I built it in like 2 hours because I had already built the first one. So I was editing photos of the square river table during all of those wait times for making the round concrete form. So I would, you know, there was really just never any downtime and it worked perfect. So, I guess all it is if you got a good idea, don't leave it behind. But I just want to say one more time, this modern picnic table is not that bad because it is picnic table building season still. I'm having like 6 people a week send me pictures of the picnic table they're making.
Snap.
So it's just and this sucker's got a 250,000 views now.
It's just it's a slow legitimate roller, video. Man, there you go.
It's a slow roller. Yeah, you're right.
It just needed to mature.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm telling you though, before summer's up, I'm gonna do a fresh take on the modern picnic table because
moderner picnic table. Did you see
Craft with Ellen's picnic table?
I did. It looked really great. It was almost like a longboard. Really liked that one. It was like a longboard surfboard is what it reminded me of with the shape. It was really great.
All right. I understand we have some questions.
We do.
Or a question at least.
That's right. Yeah, I had a question that got sent in. I think actually it got sent to the podcast email, but here it is. So this one is from Richard Handel, maybe Handel, but it's D-E-L, not D-L-E. But here we go. Oh, I like the subject line. It says, Bachelor in Boredom. It says, hey, I'm currently dying of boredom at my architecture internship. The projects are boring and I spend hours behind a desk doing CAD. Maybe Ben can relate to this. I used to have a concrete countertop business a few years back, and I think that would be fun to start back and try and attempt some sort of fabrication business around that. And, you know, it was a long message, but he kind of goes on to ask, what are some cool things that you could build sort of as a side hustle? Or maybe what are some good prospects for people that already have a full-time thing going, whether that's school or a separate job, but want to do something creative and also put some change in their pocket while they're doing it?
So do you think he's asking it more for like a product to sell type of thing more than... That's what I'm guessing. Doing YouTube.
Product to sell or service. Yeah, exactly. So he's wanting to do something physically. Yeah, it's not about the content.
Well, let's
tackle the boredom part first.
Yeah, so he says, I've been a fan of yours for a while, and you're a big reason why I wanted to build things in the first place. I don't want to give up on the degree yet, just considering that I'm halfway through it already, but I need to mix it up a little bit. So that's basically what it was. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to mix it up, getting out from behind the computer.
So I find that boredom, when you're doing the general subject matter of what you want, whether it's design or making, is often because it's not because you're not interested in the subject matter, is that you're not feeling a sense of ownership for your effort. And this is why I don't think there's lazy people and hardworking people. I think there's people that see a clear path for how their effort benefits them, and there's people that are confused about that. And the more I clarify to myself how my effort creates benefit for me, and sometimes I have to even kind of trick myself a little bit.
This is totally going to be worth it.
Right. The clearer I see that connection, the harder I work. The more fuzzy that is and more indirect and hopefully and maybe if all goes right, often the less motivated I am. So if you're in the right thing but you're not feeling that, then it's about sort of, I need to up my entrepreneurial game, which I think is, I think he's on the right way of thinking. I think what's dangerous is when people think, I'm bored doing this. This means I need to switch careers and get a degree in something else. When really what they may be bored about is that the fact that they're doing it on somebody else's terms, not the actual subject matter. Mm-hmm. So I really like that he's looking at sort of being more entrepreneurial as the solution. That being said, I don't think looking for a particular product type or type of thing that you make is as important as looking at the resources that you have and the amount of time that you have and developing stuff out of that. So I think it's about looking at how many square feet of floor space do I have available? What kind of budget do I have for materials and tools? And what are the things design-wise, aesthetically, or sensibility-wise, or mission-wise that I'm interested in? And then what's the intersection of all those things? And then how do I get started tomorrow?
Totally.
Yeah, it's funny because so I guess Mike and I have something in common is that we both actually did kind of like bail on educational things halfway through. You were like, well, how far were you through your music engineer?
I was about to get my associates. I was really, really close.
Okay. And yeah, I was like halfway through maybe a little bit more of that master's program that I was in.
Oh, master's. Oh.
That's right, buddy. An MA that I bailed on. Well, I only got the A part of it, I guess, since I only did half of it. So we're in the same boat. You got two A's almost. I only got one.
There we go.
But yeah, like I think so that would be the other part of it is you have to take a really good long look at your situation and ask yourself, am I bored with this or is this the right thing for me? Because I do think that like a lot of people in that situation would have just like stuck it out and been like, I've done half the degree. I'm going to do the other half. And it's like, you know, they say don't throw good money after bad. But what about time? I mean, I would argue that that's more valuable than money especially if you're going to go even beyond that, then maybe get a career that you don't like. So, you know, it's hard to say, to give advice when you don't know somebody's situation and how much they actually enjoy something or not.
No, it's easy to give advice.
Okay, it's easy to give advice. It may not be good.
Here's how I'd break it down. If you're paying for your own education, then quit whenever you want. If your parents are paying for it, then you kind of owe it to them to finish it out.
That could be true.
Totally.
Well,
like, right. It's just disrespectful.
It's disrespectful, yeah. But yeah. Or have a plan set up so that you can be like, hey, mom, here's the $10,000 you already spent. Sorry.
Right. And then also the other thing to factor in, if you have a history of not finishing things,
yeah,
that's more reason to finally finish something, even if you think you're sure that it's not what you want. Because there's nothing, it's so funny. Like I have a friend, don't think she listened to this, so I think
there
I'm
we
okay.
Go.
She always posts on Instagram how she's going to start this new initiative or this new company or this new entrepreneurial thing. And then she always reaches out and is so exciting. And she's done this now for like 5 to 10 years. And she's super smart and super capable. But then she always finds a reason to switch and do something else after about 8 months.
Right.
Wow.
Because she just isn't seeing the growth in it that she wants. And now every time she comes up with, you know, at first when she'd bring up her ideas to me and want feedback, I'd be like, oh, always happy to talk about this, happy to help. But I find myself less and less enthusiastic because I've seen her try like 4 or 5 different times.
Right.
I take the time to think about it, give some insights, and then, you know, pivoting, doing something completely different.
Yeah.
So I think you should be self-objective. And if you have a tendency where you've quit or not quit, but pivoted and switched focus, and you've been doing that a lot without taking something to completion, maybe every once in a while, mix it in and stick it out a little bit longer just to see it. It might be you, not the actual thing.
Yeah. And just to prove it to everybody else too, because you don't want to be the boy who cries wolf.
Right.
So yeah. So he says, with this internship winding down in a month, do you have any advice on how to slowly implement some projects that could be a bit of a side hustle or how to jumpstart those creative juices again? So what do you guys do whenever you've been either editing too much or you've been traveling too much? Is the easiest thing just to hop into a new project, something quick and easy you know you're going to get done? Or do you kind of tackle that project you've been thinking about while you haven't been building?
I think you can honestly go either way. I think the key thing is just like, even when you don't want to do it, just getting out and doing it. So I say like, you know, people ask the question a lot, how do you keep motivated, that sort of thing. And I just kind of look at it as work at a certain point. And I think we've even said this before on there, like, you know, if most people that have a normal 9-to-5 job, you don't wake up every day and you're like, woo, time to go to work. But
right.
You get up and you take a shower, you brush your teeth, hopefully put some clothes on and you go and do it. And so I think the same is actually true for a lot of creative endeavors. And it's one of those things where like, yeah, you may not feel motivated to get going, but like once you get going, you kind of like can get into a flow and it's just, you just gotta do it. Like the hardest part about going to the gym is going to the gym.
Totally. No, that's the truth, man. All right. And so my advice to Richard is, since he mentioned earlier that he had a countertop or a concrete countertop business a few years back before starting the internship and school, I would say go back to that.
Yeah.
Beat down your old contacts, find a couple jobs, get yourself busy. And then while you're working on those, you're going to have a million ideas pop up. Because I know that's the case for me, is the biggest thing to spark new ideas is to build something else.
Exactly.
Especially if you're wanting somewhat related ideas. So if you're doing a concrete project, you're going to come up with 5 more in the process of building it.
Right.
So just think about what you're interested in and start going down the rabbit hole.
And it's probably one of the best ways to get yourself opportunities in terms of leads. Because if you already have some people that you've made concrete countertops, you might have like other concrete ideas, things that you could do for them. You know, you find new people, there may be other things they need, new opportunities, word's going to spread. So yeah, the quicker you just like get doing something, the faster it's going to spread and more opportunities can come your way.
But let's think about a concrete countertop business, right? Okay. I think I would imagine that's a client related business that someone hires you to do.
Right.
And concrete countertops are expensive. If you hire someone to do it, it's going to cost you between 90 and about $150 per square foot.
Okay.
So it's a labor intensive thing. It's also probably from a business side, an inconsistent thing where you get a few of these jobs that pay a lot every once in a while, but they're maybe too few and too far between.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the thing that you could kind of mix is the mixing and pouring of the concrete, there's a lot of setup, particularly when you're doing it on site. So it might be something where you create a series of prefab or pre-made concrete countertops, but more for kitchen islands and outdoor grill stations and outdoor coffee tables and things like that. So you're just making these slabs and then you kind of make the bases and stuff on demand, or you have a bunch of different that. So if you have, you know, a half of a garage where you can store a whole bunch of concrete slabs vertically, you could knock out a bunch of them, make a bunch of molds, spend a weekend pouring and finishing, and then, you know, as long as you have a place to store them, and then you could sell the pre-made ones at kind of a discount. So one, that's a way to sort of offset the sort of time demands of waiting for a custom job, is if you have sort of a time to sort of build up inventory, then you just have to, you know, post them on Houzz and different sites like that, or, you know, the sort of Facebook marketplace and all those kind of things to kind of sell them. And you can provide concrete countertops for way cheaper because you don't have to do all the setup on site and all that kind of stuff. People are sort of coming and picking them up, and you could still probably make a pretty good margin just selling them for about $30 to $40 per square foot, which would be significantly cheaper for the consumer. And you could still get a pretty healthy margin for yourself.
And I still have to imagine just posting to Facebook, Marketplace, and even Craigslist as like your service, you know, just saying these are the slabs that I have, however you make that post, but also just saying that you do custom work as well. That's another lead. And if you've done this in the past, then hopefully you've got a client list that if they don't need a job from you, they've got homies that you've done concrete they have friends that have seen your work that, you know, may be interested in as well. So I would exhaust all of my existing leads and then go from there. But I think you're onto something there, Ben, for sure.
It'd be funny, like instead of being a hardwood dealer that's got a bunch of live edge slabs, you just have a bunch of concrete countertops that you've made.
Exactly.
Pictures of you standing next to it to show how big it is.
Yeah, exactly. Tony for scale. Who's Tony? Yeah. I don't know.
It's an average sized dude.
All right, guys. Well, what have y'all been obsessed with? What have you been watching? Ooh. Anything new?
Let me think. Do you have anything?
So I've got one. You know, I don't, pretty much the only shows I watch are on Netflix, and I hate that that's where all my recommendations come from, because I feel like I'm alienating people if they're not doing that. But there's this documentary drama on Netflix called The Last Tsars.
Okay.
It's talking about Russia, like pre-World War One. And it's kind of interesting because that's just something that nobody ever really gets in American history class.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting, the dynamic of it. It's kind of a mix between a low-budget drama and a high-budget History Channel show where they would come in with experts talking about stuff. So it's not bad. It's not great, but it's what I've been watching as I've been like editing and stuff. Some fun facts.
I thought of one. Good one, too. Mm-hmm. This is a banger.
Okay.
Veronica Mars, back on Hulu, season 4. Now, I don't know if you guys ever watched it, but I was a huge...
No, I'm not a 14-year-old girl.
Okay, so that's what I thought. My wife like tried to sell me on like, oh, we should watch Veronica Mars. This was like 10 years ago or whatever. And I was like, isn't that like a CW show for, like high school girls? That's what I always thought about it.
And she said, yes.
And it turns out I'm a high school girl at heart. No, but no. Dude.
I'm just giving you a hard time. Jesse really likes it.
It's a legit show. Like, it's very good. The first... So I'm only 2 episodes into this newest season 4, which is what came back on Hulu. But like, it's a lot grittier than like what you would think it is. Even like the early seasons, like it deals with death and rape and all sorts of different stuff. But it's cool. Like the way that it's structured is usually it would be where every season had like an overarching mystery that she would solve throughout the course of the season, but then every episode would have its own little self-contained stories also.
Okay.
It's like very well written. It's I like legit think it's something that people of any age pretty much would like. So if you've never watched Veronica Mars because you've had preconceived notions about what it was and you're looking for something new to watch, become a marshmallow head. I think that's what they call the fans of it.
There you go.
Maybe just marshmallows.
All right. What about you, Ben? What do you got?
Mine's going to be Vintage Revivals on Instagram. Mandy Grubler. Yeah. Not only did she give me the great sort of lead on the Limestrong plaster. Whenever we talk, we basically have this conversation whenever me and her get a chance to sit down. We go, what are you like currently obsessed with? Mm. And so I was telling her about all the sort of things I'm working on. And then she brought up both that plaster. And then the other thing, She's like, I'm really into caning. I'm like, you mean like beating people with a stick? And she's like, no, like the kind of like wicker paneling. So you know those like old chairs that would have that kind of like bamboo caned kind of like seat? She's been making these really cool wall panels out of them where she makes a maple frame. And then you put this sort of like you get these rolls of this caning that's like woven bamboo. Mm-hmm. And you put that into it like the way you would stretch canvas over a frame for painting. But then you wet the cane and it shrinks and then tightens itself within the wooden frame that you made for it.
Ah, okay.
And she's using it to make these kind of like acoustic panels. So she'll paint a wall like a medium green that's like kind of soft. And then she'll put these caned panels over it. So the perforations, you kind of see the color flowing through underneath this kind of like more tan bamboo kind of lattice. It's pretty cool. It creates sort of a wall surface that has a lot of depth. And it also may have some nice acoustical properties as well to kind of soften and diffuse up a little bit of noise. But I think what's interesting is that it's really lightweight. It's relatively inexpensive. And you could make really interesting interior partitions, screens, or just use it to cover up, you know, broad surfaces that are kind of ugly without adding a lot of weight to things. I think you can do a really interesting sofa where the back of the sofa, which can tend to be a little bit ugly, you could, you know, use stuff like this to kind of panel that back of the sofa and come up with some pretty cool stuff. So shout out to Mandy and shout out to caning.
Yeah, she really does do awesome stuff. She just did a kind of outdoor patio whole thing, or she might still be working on it. But regardless, if it's done, it looks amazing. If it's still in progress, it's looking great. But it's been a couple of days since I've seen an update, and it really does look awesome. So shout out Vintage Revivals for sure. All right, everybody. Well, thank you for listening. We really do appreciate it. If you enjoyed the episode, shoot us a review in the iTunes app. That just lets the app know that we're a decent show and that I should suggest us to people that listen to similar content. If you don't follow us on Instagram, I am at Modern Builds. Chris, you are at Four Eyes Furniture. And Ben, you are at Benjamin Ueda. Collectively, we're at Modern Maker Podcast. Send us some questions, some topic ideas. We love a good thing to talk about. All right, guys, we'll see you later. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.